Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com and CPRMetro.org. I'm out on the campaign trail in Southern California right now, and I like running for governor of California for the simple fact that I'm spending a lot of time in my state. I'm spending a lot of time where I grew up. I was down in San Diego for a couple days. I've always loved San Diego. I'm in Long Beach now, just a few miles from where I actually grew up. And we'll be doing things in Los Angeles and Orange County over the weekend. And it was difficult being on the campaign trail and with a lack of funds to do Cindy Sheehan Soapbox this week. The hotel we stayed at in San Diego was very inexpensive, and the Wi-Fi was very terrible, and I need that to do the show. I don't have a smartphone. I have a very dumb phone, so it's getting a little more difficult to continue Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, but I am going to try to keep providing it every week on our weekly basis. Being on the campaign trail, I am constantly told by people that they listen to the show every week and they love it. And I don't get a lot of feedback from you all. So please, if you have any questions, comments, criticisms, support, whatever, email me at CindySheehanSoapbox@gmail.com. People said they're afraid of inundating me, but I love to do Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I love to keep providing it, but I also need feedback from you to make it better and to know that I'm not just talking to myself. So our guest today is Randy Credico, and Randy is an American comedian, political candidate, activist, and the former director of the William Moses Kuntzler Fund for Racial Justice. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back with Randy Credico, who is now running for governor of the state of New York. So he and I, once again, have much in common. So stay tuned, and we'll be right back. Randy Credico, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm really looking forward to this. I have been looking forward to it.
Okay, wonderful. You are doing something that I in New York that I'm also doing in California. Can you tell my listeners about your campaign?
Well, I can tell them about your campaign. I know that you're running against Jerry Brown, the Peace and Freedom Party, and I'm very excited to be a supporter of that. And always available for any kind of fundraiser when I'm in California, because I grew up in California, and you're perfect for the gig. So I'm really happy that you're running for that position in New York.
Well, great. Get on out here, dude.
That's right. I actually grew up in Pomona, California. Uh-huh. You know, I went to Pomona High School. I went to Emerson Junior High School. And I went to college in La Verne. So, at any rate, in New York, I've been here for a long time. I've run, against Chuck Schumer, who, you know, is a real bad guy, for Senate in 2010. I ran for mayor last year, got nearly 3% of the vote in the Democratic primary. I am, within the Democratic primary, Democratic party. You know, I say that reluctantly and hold my nose when I say that because we know it's really a one-party system, but it's my way of trying to get the debate in the right direction or the left direction within the Democratic Party, because it's such a party of failure, a party of war, a party of surveillance. Everything that you've stood up against, the Democratic Party here is no different than the Democratic Party in California. You got Dianne Feinstein. We have Chuck Schumer. We have Andrew Cuomo, who is the governor. And he is running for re-election this year without any opposition until I just, of course, have filed my papers to run against him in the primary. There'll be people running against him in the general election.
Right.
In the meantime, I may end up there, but there's a Green Party candidate that's pretty good. But he needs to be exposed on all of his regressive political maneuvers and his political agenda, you know, publicly.
Well, what kind of response do you get from Democrats in New York? California and New York are, we are the repositories of huge Democratic machines. So,
right.
What kind of response do you get from the more establishment Democrats?
Well, you know, the party really sticks together here. It's a closed operation. They are not publicly, none of them will come out and support me. But privately, Cuomo has really worked with the Republican Party for, you know, the last 6 years. He's really a closet Republican, which I don't even know what the difference are
right.
Between the two parties. But he has worked closely. He manipulated the state Senate, which is got 32 Democrats and 30 Republicans, but it's run by the Republicans because he was able to get Ford to Bolt to form this independent coalition that sides with Republicans. And so he really is, and the funny, the irony is that, you know, I worked with this guy in 2002 and 2003 and part of 2004. He was part of our coalition against New York's draconian Rockefeller drug laws. He had just lost a race to Carl McCall in a Democratic primary, bolted out. It was a real debacle, and he hung his wagon to the star of this movement that was really reaching a crescendo in 2002, 2003, and it was to repeal New York's mandatory minimum sentencing laws called the Rockefeller drug laws, which was the first of its kind nationally. Mm-hmm. It sparked a national trend towards mandatory minimum sentencing. And, you know, he's been in office now for 4 years. They were reformed somewhat, but he was with us calling for repeal. And they were slightly reformed. And since he's been in office, he's totally turned his back on that movement. As he has on prison reform, trying to make major changes in the criminal justice system, which needs to be imploded and, started from the bottom up again. It's as racist as any place in the South, the criminal justice system of the state of New York.
Yeah.
You know, 90% of the people going to jail still on drug charges happen to be black or Latino. Actually, it's 95%. He's been bad on economic policies, during the Occupy movement. He did not extend the millionaire tax, here that we had. There's a millionaire tax, and so he dropped it, and there was a lot of demonstrations against him, but he made some kind of change, but he dropped the millionaire's tax back then. I can go on and on about his repressive. I mean, he's got the new thing is to consolidate the state police with all of the local police forces into one huge database. He put out there this DNA legislation that was passed that people who are black who do turnstile jump a turnstile because they can't afford to go into the subway, they get their DNA taken at this point. On so many fronts, he has been so retrogressive, but not unlike Brown is actually more progressive than he is. If you can believe it.
I doubt that. I don't believe it.
I mean, really. Well, he's of the same mindset. These guys are both political monsters, part
right.
of the machine, and heavy megalomaniacs.
Well, you talk about Jerry Brown and Dianne Feinstein, one of my senators, and I just want to say that Barbara Boxer is no great shakes either. But,
no, I agree.
Yeah,
I agree.
So Dianne Feinstein actually performed the wedding ceremony. Jerry Brown just got married not that long ago. You know, he was in his late 60s or early 70s when he finally got married. And Dianne Feinstein performed the ceremony. So it's just like a very incestuous machine here. All I needed to know about de Blasio was that the Clintons swore him in. And he's part of that Clinton diabolical cabal.
I know him for a long time. You know, back in 1986... from 86 to 90, I had a show, a U.S. Out show in Nicaragua. back and forth. I used to do my act in front of the U.S. Embassy, and I would do my Reagan impression and talk about the Contras and, you know, in front of all these peace groups that came in from Europe and from Canada and the U.S. would congregate every Thursday and have a vigil. And there were religious people there, and there were, you know, showbiz people. And then I was I was a performer there. And that's where de Blasio met me, was down then and there. And so you fast forward, I was in 5 debates with a guy in 30 or 40 forums. But look, the guy became a political operative and in the 1990s and got very close to the Clintons, got very close to Cuomo, and that whole Democratic establishment. So he's in right now, and he's given the fig leaf of being a progressive. But, you know, the first thing he did when he became mayor was to appoint Bill Bratton from Los Angeles and from New York of, you know, from the 90s to be the police commissioner. Here's one of the most divisive figures who is the one that the brainchild, Stop and Frisk was his brainchild, and he totally against community policing. But, you know, and plus you run this, New York City is run by the military. Let's be honest. It's not, the mayor has some say over some Medicare or libraries, and, you know, it's got about $4 or $5 billion to work with this discretionary budget. But the city, by and large, is run. There's so many police officers from like military personnel at the various transportation networks, you know, like Port Authority and Grand Central. You see a lot of police, federal police there, and FBI and, you know, Homeland Security everywhere. So we are really, since it's the capital of the world, under military control, as is the rest of the country, I suppose. And de Blasio is window dressing on the whole affair. But, you know, like Clinton, he's controlled by similar evil, sinister, you know, figures out there.
Well, one thing that he also did just right after being sworn in is that he gave a speech to AIPAC and the American Israeli something. I never get the...
It was a secret speech, and he said that the part of the job description of being mayor is to support Israel, is to protect Israel, whatever it was.
Defend the state of Israel, and is that in the job description of the mayor of New York?
Well, listen, he's all, just a few months before the election, he went out and there was this guy who even like, guys like Netanyahu wouldn't go near. There was this guy, bigoted, racist rabbi in Israel who died, and de Blasio put out this, you know, really nice statement, really, you know, heralding this guy. It's like everyone's a whoa. But that's what he did that. He also has been saber rattling with Iran for the past 5 or 6 years. Look, his real name is Warner Wilhelm. Let me tell you what an operative he is. All right, his name is Warner Wilhelm. All right, he's German-American. Somehow he had a remote family member with the last name of de Blasio, and at some point in his life, he decided not to change his last name, but his first name. I mean, who the hell does that?
Yeah.
to build de Blasio rather than to go on with the Warner Wilhelm, because he had political ambitions and a new German last name wouldn't fare well in New York. And now he's pandering to the most extreme, you know, Jewish organizations in New York City, New York State, maybe nationally. There are other groups that came out there, a lot of progressive Jewish leaders and lawyers that just signed a letter to him, that thing at AIPAC, to do that behind closed doors and basically give the stamp of approval of their agenda without any discussion was something that was really at best reprehensible.
So when you ran for mayor of New York, you said, in the Democratic primary, and you told me in an email that you actually helped de Blasio win.
I did.
What was up with that?
Well, there were 5 of us running. The best, the most progressive next to me was John Liu. But the worst was this woman who was the prohibitive favorite by the name of Christine Quinn, who was tied to the hip to Mayor Bloomberg, and she was going to maintain Bloomberg's policies. They're really reactionary. And so what I did was I had a meeting with him out in Brooklyn, and he told me, look, you and I are both against the war in Iraq. He said that I never saw the demonstration, but he did say, I said, that's like the most important thing, because I want to know where any of these council members, he was a council member at the time, or any elected official was on this platform, where they were in February 2003. Did they support, you know, that war? And, he said that he was a guy who was out there against it. So on that issue alone, the fact that he had been in Nicaragua, he remembered me from down there, and he said he had that liberation theology blood, you know, that Ernesto Cardenal had an impact on him. He was a European social democrat like Olaf Palme. You know, he laid that all on me. I mean, I should have known better. But the others were worse, and I knew I couldn't win, so I had a non-aggression pact with him. And I really went after the Bloomberg clone, which was Christine Quinn. And I gave him some praise at a few events, even though when he was public advocate, which, you know, is supposed to be, it's next in line to the mayor. It has absolutely no teeth. There's no budget to it, but you're next in line, and you're supposed to be the public advocate. And in reality, when I said he was a great public advocate, he made the prior one, Betsy Gottbaum, who was an establishment public advocate, politician. I said he made her look like Harriet Tubman. That's how inactive he was as a public advocate. He used the whole 4 years, you know, looking for a way to get publicity to promote his run for mayor in 2013, which is what he eventually did. And he got very lucky that he won it. It could have gone to anybody. They kept me out of all of the televised debates. Every debate that I was in, I won. The press that was there would all say that I won, because I was very honest about it all. And I called, you know, I wasn't measuring what I said. And, you know, I said, we need to tax Wall Street. We need to, you know, get rid of police that are outside of the city. You know, that the police force is basically an occupying force. You know, they're like slave catchers. You know, I was very frank about everything, and I did very well no matter where I spoke. The criminal justice system is a complete joke. It's like convict leasing still exists. So all of the stuff that I said resonated well at these debates, particularly like at the Schomburg Center or up in the Bronx or with the Gay Men Health Crisis Center. And then the other person was Wiener. Now, Wiener supported the Patriot Act. He supported the war in Iraq and Afghanistan, everything. He rubber stamped everything. But so those are the alternatives to him, were two people, were Wiener and Christine Quinn. So I, you know, didn't really matter, as you can see, who won. The beat goes on. The criminal justice system is intact as it was prior to his inauguration. And there's not going to be any taxation of Wall Street. His big theme was universal pre-K. Well, that's only $230 million to have universal pre-K. That doesn't help 70,000 homeless people, and the million people that are out of work here. You know, that should be first, and you got to have a massive jobs program, and you have to have a housing initiative, and that would cost billions and billions and billions of dollars. Unfortunately, a lot of people felt I didn't give them like warm support. You know, unfortunately, people like Susan Sarandon and the woman from the, well, I say, a moderate to conservative magazine called The Nation, Katrina, you know, endorsed him and it didn't really go beyond. I never endorsed him. I just didn't go after him. I guess that was a quiet endorsement over the other ones. But I if you saw my ads. After when I was running on the Tax Wall Street Party, I attacked him, you know, from top to bottom. Everything that he really stood for. And, you know, a Bill Clinton locked in. When you have Bill Clinton supporting you, that's bad news. All right. And the Reverend Sharpton, he supported him. Bad news. Faux religious, you know, civil rights leader, Sharpton, you know, who was once an FBI informant. You know, so if you take a look at the people, it's sad that a guy like Harry Belafonte got fooled by him, but I think he probably felt he was better than the other two. So what they did was they took an Obama over a Hillary Clinton here, but they got the same result.
Well, speaking of Obama and the lesser of two evils, did you watch the State of the Union address?
I tried. I had somebody tie me down and keep my eyes open with the toothpicks to watch it all the way through so I could listen to it. But, yeah, it was a complete joke. You know what I mean? It was really – see, it's such a Democratic claptrap. That's what it was.
Right.
It was a smorgasbord of claptrap. You know, he didn't talk about the criminal justice system like he was supposed to. He didn't apologize for the surge and the war, and he lied about us being Iraq is in the same. It's in terrible shape.
Right.
And they don't have bases there. He didn't talk about with any meaning about the surveillance.
Right.
How he was going to end surveillance, the drone strikes. This country, New York City. I said this, and here's what I'm going to get back to. You know, I forgot to bring this up. New York City is an unsafe city because of our foreign policy. New York City is an unsafe city because of the drone strikes. That's why it's unsafe. You know, you could have a massive defense system here against terrorism, but, you know, as long as we're inflicting terror on the world, it makes us a soft target.
Well, not only did he not apologize for his very aggressive foreign policy, he paraded that poor young man who was on his 10th deployment, which Obama sent him on. He
That's
was
amazing.
Maimed for life, and they gave him a standing ovation. And, you know, Randy, the whole speech, which I wouldn't have watched, but I was campaigning in San Diego. I was with my sister, and she kind of, like, is a political junkie, and she likes to, because we know all those people, you know, face it, we know them all there personally, but she likes to watch their reactions, so that's why we had to watch it. So the whole speech, I was, you know, posting on Facebook, yeah, my old cynical, sarcastic.
I saw it.
Yeah,
I saw the stuff about the
But
culture.
When
yes.
they stood that young man up and gave him those murderers, those people who sent him to die, those people who have been responsible for killing, displacing, or maiming millions of people around the world, gave him a standing ovation. I cried.
It's the most cynical, exhibition I've ever seen in my life, to take this guy and you've already abused him 10 times and then abuse him to give credence to a murderous, violent, genocidal war policy. And the guy was just, you know, a pawn in the whole episode. Here he is being sent there, and then he's being used by 537 and then the Supreme Court. People never really served, with the exception of McCain, you know, who got better treated than the people down in Gitmo, I can tell you that.
Right.
You know, for them to go and to applaud that long-standing ovation, it was, all right, so what are they applauding? The fact that he survived it or that he fought over there on a worthless, a real horrible cause, which is the cause of oil, minerals, and geopolitical
right.
expansion.
Ten
yeah, I saw your postings. They're very moving.
Frickin' 10 deployments. And I'm still in Southern California campaigning this weekend. I'm staying with a family who they're in military family speak out, and their son is on his 5th deployment, and you know they've heard of more than 10 deployments in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it's despicable.
I know. I don't know how a guy like this does it. I really don't know. Does he have no soul? Does he have no, I mean, what is inside of him? And then you hear all these liberals, you know, MSNBC, cheerleading for him as if that was anything honest about that speech. And then, and instead of criticizing him for the closing, for the cult to use that at the end.
Well, they said it was masterful, to end it that way.
Yeah, they certainly are shameless propagandists for the good cop and his phony good cop, bad cop routine they have going on in D.C. And but they get paid for it. They get well paid for it, you know, and that's what they decided to do with their life. With their lives is to sell out and be a propagandist. You know, it's too bad. People like, it seems like some of these nation graduates are like centrists or rightists or propagandists. You know, it's a magazine I don't read anymore.
Right.
But, you know, they're the MSNBC of print. And yeah, it was really appalling. I expect it from Fox News. We expect it from CNN. Mm-hmm. And you know, you get to expect it from, MSNBC. And, you know, why even watch it? You know what I mean? Why, there's no point to watch it. Better off just reading people like Chris Hedges online, and not waste any time with these television shows. I don't even know who watched. Not that many people watch MSNBC, a couple hundred thousand.
Right, it's got very low ratings.
300 million people don't watch it. And so it's a bunch of white 35-year-olds that watch it and who are, you know, relatively well-off. And, you know, they get their kicks and get the kicks, and they feel like they've been vindicated on their rather moderate political positions by watching MSNBC.
Well, we look at any of the so-called liberal media. You've mentioned The Nation, MSDNC, I like to call it. And if you like look at the so-called liberal radio hosts like Stephanie Miller,
Randy
Rhodes, Ed Schultz, who's also on MSDNC, you know, the policies they defend with Obama, they would be screaming bloody murder if Mitt Romney or John McCain or Bush were doing the same thing.
Well, listen, they're talking about the $10.10. First of all, it's not even a healthy wage.
Right.
for defense contracts, are you kidding?
$10.10, it's a slogan, not a living wage, not a fair wage.
90% profit on these defense contracts, you know, and they're all a scam. And they say $10.10 to, and the thing is that he uses some buzzwords and, you know, and some, what do you call it, some specious, you know, remarks about how, you know, that's supposed to get to you. We don't need, these guys who are washing dishes of our troops should be paid more than the poverty wage,
right.
That kind of stuff, to try to appeal, you know, to our emotions here. I mean, he's a really crafty individual, and Obama.
I want to say that the people washing dishes for the troops making $10.10, the soldier on the ground doesn't make $10.10 an hour.
Right, I know that, yeah. So, but the thing is that everyone should be making $10.10 an hour, and the thing is that it's that he's not talking about taxing rich people. He's not talking about, you want to do this? There's an easy way to do it, man. You just, you know, you tax these banks, you tax Wall Street, and you'll have plenty of money. Instead of taking money from the average individual and using it, squandering it on military hardware, military schemes, and surveillance schemes, all the stuff that, you know, doesn't mean anything to help us out. It just helps out those who are funding the way Washington works. You know, so I was really, there's no surprise. I mean, obviously you weren't surprised by the State of the State address. It's exactly what I expected to see. You know what I mean? If I'm going to watch, an episode of, the FBI, you know, with Efren Zimbalist Jr., I know what it's going to be about. It's going to be, you know, an FBI promotion. So, that's exactly what, when you see him, it's going to promote the way this guy has fooled everyone into thinking that things, the change that he promised in 2008 actually has been realized. There has been no change.
Well, there's been change, but,
worse.
You know, people didn't, like, make Obama be specific about the change, you know, because change
right.
can be for the worse.
You know, change is for the worse. I mean, Bush could have never gotten away. There had been some, you know, pushback. If Bush had been around, the first thing he does is he puts Petraeus, he elevates Petraeus, but then puts him into the CIA.
Right.
You know, and he keeps Daryl Gates, I mean, not Daryl Gates, Robert Gates. Uh-huh. And he brings in a reaction like Hillary Clinton. And from the very outset, you know, you should have seen the tea leaves right there in the first couple, even before his administration, how reactionary. And it got worse, you know, with the surveillance stuff, with the NDAA, H.R. 347, the surge. But, you know, it's not him. He's just fronting.
Right.
That's what he decided to do for it with his life,
right,
is to be a front man. And MSNBC has decided to be a propagandist for the front man.
And then if we have a Republican in 2016, and if our pattern holds up, we will have a Republican in 2016, then Fox News will become the front organization, and MSDNC will become the opposition again.
Right, right, right. But it's the same. It's like, you know, two corner men in a wrestling match.
Exactly.
You know?
So Randy, we know, like,
in a wrestling match, and you get so cynical, and you realize, you know, where are we going from here? You know, it's just getting worse and worse.
We knew that what Obama was going to say. We know. We can see, we can read patterns. We're not, like, brilliant. Well, I'll speak for myself. I'm not brilliant. I just can look back on patterns, look what the empire has done. And so we're not surprised by the actions of the empire. But what I think our job is to wake other people up to what's going on, so we can have a true revolution of values to work together to change things.
Right. I mean, really realize Thomas Paine's vision for America, which, you know, didn't happen. It was right after, you know, Washington was sworn in. It got worse, and it's gotten worse ever since. There's been no let up, you know, of the empire, of the violence against Native Americans, the violence against African Americans, the violence, you know, women not having much say, children labor. I mean, things may have gotten better on some levels, but right now the economy is finished in this country. It's not getting any better. Listen to Richard Wolff talk about that. He's my economic advisor.
Mm-hmm.
The economy's not going to get any better, and I expect the conditions to get worse in this country, and, you know, and the repression to get worse in this country. And I think they're setting it up, you know, with all these different agencies, you know, to put people in detention camps and things like that. You know, I hate to sound like a conspiracy freak, but it just looks like it's heading in that direction.
This isn't the Alex Jones show, but we do see some things that are very concerning, the militarization of police forces, that's for sure.
Everywhere.
Yeah.
I've been talking about this for a long time, just about the police. They've all got these 1934 era style German haircuts of the SA. They all look like Hans Röhm, who was the head of the SA. They all got these buzz cuts, and, you know, they're built up on steroids. They're no longer cops. They're bouncers. These guys are bouncers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're all built up. They're on steroids. They're not there to solve crimes. There are no Columbos or Kojaks. You know, fictional television detectives. They don't exist. These guys are hardcore protectors, like the Cossacks were of the Tsar in the 19th century, the Guardia Nacional for Somoza in Nicaragua. You know, it's the same mindset. The Swiss Guard for the popes in the 19th century and for Louis the 16th. These are the kind of police forces that you have from city to city to city. It's all militarized, and they're coming up with all of these scams, same way the military-industrial complex, the police-industrial complex, all of these scams that the public's paying for their own repression.
Right.
It's
stormtroopers and...
That's what they are. Just take a look at them. Everywhere you go, you know, there's a guy beaten up in Fullerton. There's a guy killed in Oakland. There's in Miami all the time. The other day in Mississippi. It just goes on. New York City all the time. Someone shot in the back by the NYPD, beaten up by the NYPD. They're stop and frisk everywhere. I've been on that train from L.A. to Ontario and seen some of the sheriffs that get on board looking for people who didn't pay for their tickets,
right,
you know, for that train. And these guys are built like stormtroopers.
Kenneth Harding Jr. in San Francisco was murdered because he didn't pay his muni fare.
Right.
You know, well, and the thing is that there's no accountability. And as, you know, governor of California, you know, one of our major goals in our campaign is to educate people about the Law Enforcement Bill of Rights and to tell people that the communities should, you know, civilians and communities, and, you know, cops are civilians. they act like they're, you know, well, because of the militarization. And
to have free reign. They get free reign. They can do what they want.
Well, Law Enforcement Bill of Rights gives them more rights. And to me, they should have less rights and more accountability.
Yes.
Than the average citizen.
People who are for gun control, I say start from the top and get the police to engage in self gun control.
I say start from the military. I'm for gun control, but I'm more for empire control.
Me too. Well, you know, the thing is that if you don't stop it here, it's very difficult to stop a war. You know, it's like the war in Mexico, against Mexico, was all about the expansion of slavery. And people like Emerson, and Thoreau and Wendell Phillips all knew that. They knew they had to stop the monster locally because then it crept internationally. And that's what's happened. You know, if we can't change a light bulb on our street, if we can't, like, change the way the police act in our neighborhood, how are we going to stop a war from happening?
Exactly.
You know, it's very difficult. If we could change the culture and the spirit of the nation, that's got to come first, because it's just a natural outgrowth of the poisonous tree, the poisonous garden that we live in.
Oh, absolutely. Well, Randy, thank you so much for your time. And like I said, thank you for being flexible and finally getting the interview done this week. But how can my listeners get more information about your campaign or contact you or whatever?
Very simple. Uh-huh. Very simple. They go to Credico, Credico 2014.com.
Okay.
Credico14.com. And then email me at Credico2014@gmail.com. .com, but it's Credico2014.com is the web address.
Well, Randy Credico, thank you so much for your activism and for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. And
keep up the good work, and I'm going to come out there and go around and the campaign for you, because
we're here.
This is a great campaign. You've got a solid following there, and people need to get active and get involved in their campaign instead of just throwing in the towel. I mean, unless you're ready to, like, start a ground war against establishment, the only thing that you have going right now is through the electoral ballot box, and this is an opportunity for them to do it in California, because you already have a built-in support network in California, and I know how well you did when you ran against Nancy Pelosi.
Mm-hmm.
I think you could have a huge impact this year.
Well, we definitely have a more than better chance of coming in second in June and going on in the open primaries that we have now, which I fought against, but this year it may work for us instead of against us. So, and like you said, we can't give up. We can't just throw in the towel and give our, I mean, just like concede that the Democrats and Republicans own the system, that the corporations own the system. That may be true, and we may be quixotic, but we can't give up.
Got to keep going. Got to keep moving. Got to keep moving, trying different ways. And I think I applaud your entry into this race, and I think it's the right thing to do. And, you know, you got to challenge, if that's all they're going to give you right now are elections, and they may just be, you know, for public consumption. Well, let's take advantage of it.
Absolutely.
And, you know, once you win, they'll stop with the elections. All right.
Thank you so much, Randy, and good luck, and we'll be in touch.
Likewise.
Well, that's Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox for today. I hope you enjoyed it and were inspired and got some information that will be helpful for you. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar. I'd like to thank Randy Credico for being our guest this week and for being dedicated to True Change, even though he's a Democrat. And that's a joke. And, well, not really. It's not really a joke. It's really the truth. And as always, I'd like to thank you for listening and supporting the show. I'm Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Peace out for now.